Let's turn now to what happened in a Taunton, Massachusetts courtroom earlier this hour when Michelle Carter received a sentence from Judge Lawrence Moniz.
Ms. Carter, a guilty finding having entered on the indictment charging you with the involuntary manslaughter of Conrad Roy III now sentences you to 2.5 years in the Bristol County House of Correction. 15 months of said sentence shall be deemed a committed sentence, and the balance thereof shall be suspended until August 1st of 2022.
That's Judge Lawrence Moniz speaking just a few minutes ago in the Taunton courtroom as he sentenced Michelle Carter for involuntary manslaughter for her role in the suicide of her friend, Conrad Roy III. During the trial, the prosecution presented texts and Facebook messages Carter sent Roy throughout their relationship, encouraging him to follow through on his plans to take his life. This goes back to July 2014, when Conrad Roy used a portable generator to fill his truck with carbon monoxide while in a Kmart parking lot. And having regrets, Roy exited the vehicle and called Carter to tell her he was afraid and uncertain about his plans. Carter then instructed him to get back in the truck and follow through with his plans. Roy obeyed those words and got back into the truck, which had filled by that time with toxic fumes, and he died. Joining us now is WBUR senior reporter David Boeri, who has followed the trial and was in the court for the sentencing. Hi, David. We're going to make sure we can hear you loud and clear. Also with us is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
David, let's start with you. What was going on in the courtroom? Can you describe what was happening after the sentence was handed down?
Sure. What the judge has done here is he has split the verdict. He's coming in with 2.5 year sentence.
David, I'm going to interrupt you. Is there any way that you can make sure that you're on your handset?
Hold on.
And David, stand by for a second. Nancy Gertner, this case, we know, having covered it and having read a lot about it, has set some legal precedents in Massachusetts. Can you talk about what was unique? Let's go back to the conviction. What was unique about this conviction?
Well, it was unique in a number of ways. One, we're a jurisdiction that does not have a statute for assisting suicide. So to some degree, this set of facts had to be shoehorned into involuntary manslaughter, which is a common law 200 and more year old crime. It was unique in the sense that typically assisting in a suicide is someone who provides the instrumentality, someone who's present, who provides the drugs or the gun or whatever, typically not just talk. We also don't have laws in Massachusetts that require people to be good Samaritans, to interrupt a crime, to intervene, except under very narrow circumstances. And ultimately, the judge decided that although Roy was prepared to commit suicide, in the minutes before he did, Michelle Carter ought to have told him to stop. So that was unique. And then their relationship was purely electronic. Apparently, they'd met only once. So this is pure words that assisted a suicide, and that is unique.
Mm. David Boeri, we have you back there. Can you describe what was happening in the courtroom? I mean, as the sentence was handed down, there was family members there on both sides of this very sad story.
At the time of sentencing, Michelle Carter was braced. She was dry-eyed now. Her face looked a little downturned, a little surly. She knew something was coming, and it was going to be bad. As it turned out, the judge said he criticized her. He said, "I don't think her immaturity, I don't think her age was a factor in what happened. But we are a juvenile court. She was 17 at the time of this, and children need to be treated as children." So that was the basis for which he said we need to balance that which might have been appropriate in an adult court and that for this defendant who was 17 at the time. So he imposed a sentence of 2.5 years in the Bristol House of Corrections. She will serve 15. And then when that
15
happened...
15 months.
That's right. Thank you. She'll serve 15 months. She'll be under strict probation. He talked tough about all the conditions, but the fact is Moniz, who was known as somewhat of a compassionate judge, went lightly as far as the prosecution was concerned. They wanted 7 or more. The family was calling for 20. He did say, he said that he wanted her to be committed today. At that point, the defense made a motion that it should be stayed because, as Nancy has talked about, highly controversial finding. This is going to the appeals court. The defense attorney made the point that by the time if she were to go to jail now, she might be through serving before her case could possibly potentially be overturned.
David, I want to hear from you more on that, and also how people reacted. But Nancy Gertner, is there in a criminal case, there is always the potential for an appeal. Would that have been a factor in the judge's sentence today?
Well, it shouldn't have been. It absolutely shouldn't have been. The judge is not supposed to say, hey, I'll give a light sentence because there's a chance that I'm going to be appealed, and the lower the sentence, the less likely the appeal. That's actually not supposed to be a factor involved in this. It was a very thoughtful, I thought an extraordinarily thoughtful rendition of the sentence. He talked about this, the juvenile court being a unique and special court, and talked about the neuroscience of juveniles, which suggests that whoever you are in this period of time, you are going to change, you're going to evolve, and therefore rehabilitation works, particularly here. And then talked about balancing the very serious crime on the one hand against the possibilities of change, both because of her age and because of her situation.
And David, can you describe...
That's why he talked so toughly about some of the conditions that she would meet upon her release from jail, because he seems to know, and his statements indicated he knows that there was a call for a stiff sentence. So he was very tough in his talk. He was more compassionate in the sentence.
Right.
Do you want to describe, David, if you can? I know that you can. You were sitting in there. What happened when the judge read the sentence? How did Michelle Carter react, and how did Conrad Roy's family react?
Well, at the time of the sentencing, she had just got. I saw her as she came into the courtroom. She was crying and trying to control herself, walking into the courtroom at the beginning of this. By the time sentencing came around, she had been thoroughly condemned as vicious by the family, by the prosecution, as vicious, manipulative, and just reviled. And so at the point of sentencing, even at the harsh comments of the judge saying he didn't think that her question of her maturity or her youth played any role in it, that she was knowing and understood what she was doing, so she turned tough. She was dry-eyed and turned somewhat surly, thinking the worst was going to come. It was at that point, in fact, that this judge, who has surprised us before in this trial, imposed the 2.5 with 15 months to be served.
We just have a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure that we hit some important bigger picture issues as well as what just happened today. There's been a lot of talk about what this decision could mean for issues of speech in other legal cases. Michelle Carter was miles away when Conrad Roy killed himself. She did not, as you've said, supply any of the materials he used. This was a crime committed over text and internet. So is it we say things all the time on text that are nasty or that are sarcastic. So is it common to hear
people?
Well,
let me set up.
Yeah.
Let me set up how it happened, and then Nancy could. I want to hear. I love to hear what Nancy has to say.
I love when you two just set it up, knock it down. Go ahead.
So what he said in his verdict a couple of months ago in June was it had nothing to do with the texts. It had to do with the phone calls that followed. That she knew what he was doing was going to impair his life. That she ordered him to get back in the car, and so his finding was that her command. Her command to somebody that she had was able to manipulate, that was the cause of death, and that she had a duty, because she knew that she had created this hazard, she had a duty to call for help to stop it, and she didn't do it, and that was the basis for the involuntary manslaughter.
Nancy Gertner, though this is, and you spoke about this months, back in June, that this verdict initially sets a new and radical precedent. So say more about that, if you could, about how we use speech now.
Well, speech is never absolutely protected. So those who say this is a free speech issue, we can threaten people with speech, and that can be actionable as a crime. What's significant here is that this was speech in a particular context, and one can imagine other contexts that would be vulnerable, right? The doctor who advises you how to commit suicide when you're asking about it, and when you're particularly vulnerable, when you're really upset, would that, and then you do it, would that context plus the speech be actionable? One can think about a slippery slope, which is troubling, which is why most states that want to deal with this legislatively and with clarity in an assisted suicide statute and not through manslaughter.
David, last word. Go ahead.
But this is going to be very controversial. It's going to be a heated battle for appeal. The judge was even anticipating it perhaps becoming a federal matter.
Right.
But it needs to be stated that the state's highest court, the SJC, did say when it had this matter before it that the prosecution could go forward on the basis of words and words alone.
Right, which is going to make this is an uphill battle as an appeal because there was a prior decision. Now, the SJC has changed to some degree, and if there's any difference between the facts as alleged and the facts as presented at trial, that could be a basis to challenge the verdict.
But Nancy Gertner, David Boeri.
Yes,
let's get you both in here in the studio to keep watching this. Thank you so much. Nancy Gertner is WBUR's legal analyst. Thank you for being with us today, Nancy.
Thanks.
WBUR senior reporter David Boeri. See you out in Western Mass, I hope. Thanks so much for joining us.
See you soon.
We'll be right back. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston.